Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Facebook.com/issuesETC.
Under our plan, no federal dollars will be used to fund abortions.
Unless there's an explicit exclusion of abortion, abortion will be in health care reform.
We believe that abortion should be safe, legal, rare, and accessible, and that a health care reform should not make it more difficult for women to get abortions in this country.
We think that in some sense is a distraction. I mean, it's a very important issue. But in the context of a country where a growing number of millions and millions of people do not have health insurance, we feel that's more the main issue for this particular debate.
The American people will not stand for government-run insurance that uses taxpayer money to fund abortions in this country.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
Well, I guess if you stop and think about it, it's not that surprising. It's not that out of the question. The Anglican Church is, technically speaking, part of the Reformation, the English Reformation. We'll talk a little bit about that here in the first half hour of Issues, etc. And so it might surprise some to read in the papers, to hear on television, that the Vatican, that the Roman Catholic Church, has decided to institute a new church structure. That's what it's being called in the news, for Anglicans who want to join the Catholic Church. Now, these are Anglicans who are disillusioned with some parts of worldwide Anglicanism, the ordination of women, the open ordination of homosexuals, the elevation of homosexuals to the office of bishop. But the two have a lot of similarities in spite of the fact that the Roman Church is not part of the Reformation and the Anglican Church most definitely is. So what's going to become of this new structure in the Vatican for people who, Anglican people who would like to join the Catholic Church? Dr. Martin Nolan joins us here in the first half hour of the program to talk about just that. We're coming to you live this Tuesday afternoon. It's the 20th of October. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You can join us for the next 2 hours. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 1-877-623-MY-IE. You can email questions or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can always Twitter us at @issuesetc. In the second half hour of the program, Deaconess Pam Nielsen joins us, as she does every Tuesday, to teach a Sunday school lesson today, Naaman the Leper and Elisha. Elisha heals Naaman the Leper, and it's a very instructive story, especially in its New Testament application. And we'll hear more about that from Deaconess Pam Nielsen in about 25 minutes. In the second hour, Bob Emmerich, a member of the Executive Committee for Stand for Marriage Maine, will tell us a little bit about a ballot proposal to repeal pro-same-sex marriage law in the state of Maine. And then we're going to continue this Reformation Week here on Issues Etc., part two of our five-part daily series on the 16th century Reformation and its theology. Today, Faith Alone, Pastor Stephen Parks will be our guest. 1-877-623-6943. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at @issuesETC. Dr. Martin Nolan is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. He's past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Marty, welcome back to Issues, etc.
Good to be here.
How big of a move would it be for an Anglican to return to Rome?
It depends on the type of Anglican that we are talking about. The Anglicans are divided into several, they're not really political parties, because at least I don't think they are. They may have some impact on the deliberations of the bishops, but generally there is three or four groups. There is the Anglo-Catholics. This would be the group that especially surrounded Cardinal Newman in the 19th century. And Newman and some of the other Tractarians did join the Roman Catholic Church. And their understanding of the Anglican faith is, in most respects, very much like the Roman Catholic Church understanding of itself, except that the Anglo-Catholics were not agreeing to the legitimacy of papal oversight over the whole church. There are the broad church Anglicans, which we would perhaps call liberal Protestants. They're very ecumenical, and they want to be in fellowship with everybody and have a very liberal view of the Bible. These people probably would not be interested in the offer that's coming now from the Catholic Church. There are the traditionalist minds that go back to the Elizabethan settlement, the Westminster Confession, and the 39 Articles. And in many ways, they're close to a Lutheran understanding. And finally, there's the evangelicals, which are very much like the Methodists. I'm thinking of John Stott here, for example, as an Anglican practicing in Great Britain. And their outlook is very much like the Billy Graham of today. I would say that the people that are most interested in doing this that are Anglican are probably the Anglo-Catholics, because they're just so much similarity in terms of their understanding of the faith and liturgy and other things that it would be easy for them to do this. The broad church, as I said, they probably don't care, and they're the ones that have been pushing for the gay ordination. And the other two are just so small, I'm not sure that they might just jump ship altogether and go somewhere else. So it depends on what type of Anglican they are.
From the Vatican's perspective, what needs to be done in order to, at least in according to their consciences, welcome Anglicans into the Roman fold?
Well, that is what it was just done here today or yesterday. This new apostolic constitution is a structure that allows Anglicans to come in. And so now the doors are open. This was done in probably done somewhat in secret. The Anglicans seem to be somewhat surprised by this, that is the officials in the Anglican Church. And so anybody that is in the Anglican Church that would like to join the Catholic Church in this way, they just need to go down and talk to their local Catholic bishop and say, how do I do it? Because the legal structures are now in place.
Historically and theologically, have Anglicans agreed with Rome on issues like original sin, justification, sanctification?
Again, it depends on which group of Anglicans you're talking about. And maybe it helps to explain for an American audience that the Anglicans are a state church. That's really what keeps them together. It is the Anglican Church is the official state church of the United Kingdom, excluding, of course, the Irish. But it's kept together in spite of wide differences of opinion. And for us Americans, it just doesn't make sense, because we have freedom of religion, and if you get too diverse, then things split up, and that's just the way Americans do things. If you go back into history, you could say that there are certain groups, again, the Anglo-Catholics in the 19th century, well, certainly the Anglicans back around the time of Queen Elizabeth, they weren't all that far away, except that the king and queen did not want to acknowledge the authority of the pope. And that's the main point that's going to be the sticking point for any Anglicans that want to leave. Americans, Catholics tend to be very loose on this point, certainly many of the laymen. But the fact is, if an Anglican is going to join this branch of the Roman Catholic Church, the one thing they have to do is to acknowledge the ultimate authority of the Pope. And so that may be a sticking point for many people.
Well, the history of Anglicanism is remarkable because, as you just pointed out, it is a almost equal mix of theological and political activity. Where did the Anglican Church come from?
Anglican Church is originally a result of Henry VIII's inability to produce heirs, and he wanted to get a divorce from his first wife, and the first wife was related to the Catholic Roman Emperor, and that wouldn't go. So the king took matters into his own hands and decided that he would become a head of the church, and not just the head of the state. But also needs to be said that John Wycliffe had given the justification for this about 150 years beforehand. So what the ideas were not new, it just nobody had been convinced. And Henry said, well, let's I'm going to be the head of the church, and those bishops that agree with me can become part of the church. Those that don't can go over to the continent and stay with the church if they want. And then for about 100 years, the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church fought it out, culminating in the English Civil War with Oliver Cromwell, and that set up the British Commonwealth for a number of years, and then it went back to the Anglican settlement of the previous generation. And that's pretty much the way it's been ever since.
When we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Martin Noland, past director of the Concordia Historical Institute, pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana. We're talking about a new Vatican plan to help disaffected Anglicans come over to Rome. We have a place for you. We've made a place for you. There's another issue, and that has to do with married priests, those studying to be married priests. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. live this Tuesday afternoon, the 20th of October. What do you think about this Vatican attempt to reach out to disaffected Anglicans? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Email your questions or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter your questions and comments to us @issuesetc. This break is a great time to call 1-877-623-MYIE or email talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Tuesday, October the 20th. We're talking about Anglicans and Rome. In 1521, at the Diet of Worms, Martin Luther was asked to recant his writings. Luther responded, "Unless I am convinced from the sacred scriptures that I am in error, I cannot and will not recant. Here I stand. I cannot do otherwise. God help me. Amen." Will you stand with us as we proclaim these Reformation truths in the 21st century? You can take your stand by becoming a monthly or annual contributor to Issues Etc. To find out how you can become an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron, check out the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Just look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Help us proclaim the solas of the Reformation, Scripture, faith, grace, and Christ alone. Here we stand, Issues Etc. and you.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're interested in hanging around with a bunch of powerful men that further one another's careers, I guess you could meet Fred and Barney down at the Loyal Order of Water Buffalo. Stress is your problem, and those 40, 50 hours a week are killing you, and that cubicle's driving you nuts. Perhaps you should buy Joel Osteen's book and read it. If you're interested in Lutheran doctrine and practice and how we can spread that to our community, check us out, Brothers of John the Steadfast. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
You're invited this summer to an exploration and study tour of the lives of Martin Luther and J.S. Bach. This tour of Germany will be led by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Matt Phillips of Concordia University, Nebraska. See where Luther and Bach were born, lived, worked, and died. For more information on a tour of Germany, June 1st through the 10th, call area code 402-643-7444 or send an email to matthew.phillips@cune.edu. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Martin Noland is our guest. We're talking about a new Vatican plan to help disaffected Anglicans by welcoming them back to the Roman fold. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. talk back at issuesetc.org. You can Twitter us at issuesetc. What are they going to do about the clergy of the Anglican stripe who are permitted to marry? And, of course, the clergy in the Roman Church are not permitted to marry.
This is an interesting question. I haven't seen enough detail on this particular issue. I know that the Anglican clergy that are currently married can come into this this church, I should say, church division, and they can remain married with their children, and they don't have to change any of that. There is a person that I know that went that was a Lutheran seminarian and was married, had children, and he joined the Roman Catholic Church, I think about maybe 15 or 20 years ago, and they did not ask him to divorce his wife or leave his children, and they accepted him in. There are limits to how far he can go in the hierarchy. I don't believe he can become a bishop. So this is not anything new, the acceptance of married clergy. They're what you might call their grandfathered in. So the question is whether or not they will accept new clergy that have not previously been ordained. In other words, can they perpetuate a married clergy within this this Anglican group within the Catholic Church? That's a question I haven't seen asked or answered yet. There is precedent for it, though, and that is, and I think this whole structure that's being developed in the Catholic Church for the Anglicans parallels the structure that's what's known as the Eastern Catholic Church, or churches. They used to be called Uniet churches or Eastern Rite churches, and I ran into a lot of them just driving around in the city of Chicago. And what these are groups of people from the eastern half of the Roman Empire, mostly in those areas, that were originally part of the Eastern Church, that's Eastern Orthodox, and then they decided to come over to Rome. And they were allowed to keep their rituals and their sacraments and their liturgies and most of their traditions as long as they recognized the Bishop of Rome. And all of this, which was kind of done in a piecemeal way for the last 100 to 200 years, was organized at the Vatican Council. And it was interesting in the chapter that dealt with this, I don't know if I have that right in front of me, it's in the Lumen Gentium, paragraph 23, here it is. It talks about that the Roman Church is trying to bring all these churches into unity with itself. And the last part, it says, in like manner, the episcopal bodies of today are in a position to render a manifold and fruitful assistance so the collegiate feeling may be put into practical application. Namely, what they meant by that was that they were getting the sense that the Anglicans and Episcopalians could do the same thing. And this was back in 1964. So I think there's been a movement in that direction. There have been dialogues trying to accomplish this. And I think now with the issues that are dividing the Anglicans, the Rome has finally said now's the time, even if the Archbishop of Canterbury is not ready for it.
Jeff in Philadelphia emails a question. Given the profound difference between the traditional Protestant and Roman Catholic views regarding soteriology, that's a view of salvation, what types of conservative Anglicans would entertain such a move? Are these Anglicans more culturally conservative and traditional?
That's a good question, Jeff. They are, I would say, if they're willing to join the Roman Catholic Church, you would say that they're culturally conservative, namely that they're conservative in matters of morality, but they are not as strong in their upholding of the traditional Reformation doctrines. You have to understand, though, that the Anglican Church never really had as strong a sense of the Reformation solas as the Lutheran Church did, or even the Calvinist Church. The Anglican Church always tried to steer a middle way between the Roman Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church. And so because of that, the opportunity for compromise and confusion was planted very early on. even in the time of Henry VIII.
My sense, and I don't know if you have the same sense as I do, that here in the United States, those who have been disaffected by the latest moves of the Episcopal Church USA, arguably a province of Anglicanism still, although I don't think worldwide Anglicanism really wants that to remain the case, those who are disaffected in the Episcopal Church USA are of a decidedly more evangelical bent and would not in any way really be interested in a return to Rome in some form.
Yeah, I think you're correct. And there is options for them already. There's this group called the Fellowship of Confessing Anglicans, and you can get that on the web at fca.net. And they've already had several meetings worldwide, so it's not just an American type of thing. And they are probably, from what I see, they're kind of evangelically oriented, and they probably have a lot in common with us in terms of wanting to have a fixed and normative doctrinal statement. And they would, of course, be going back to the 39 Articles and the Westminster Confession. So there are other options for conservative Anglicans than joining with Rome.
From the Roman side, Marty, does it fit, as far as you can tell, with kind of the general hope of not only this pope but previous popes that unity, some kind of ecumenical unity in the church, will be achieved not by the Roman Catholic compromising anything in their teachings or practice, but by welcoming erring brothers back?
Well, I think that the great advantage that the pope and his counselors have is that they see the whole 2,000 years of Christian history as one whole. Most of the Protestants, we tend to pick and choose the pieces that we like in Christian history, and we miss all the lessons that are to be learned in 2,000 years. The Catholic Church, no, that they look at the whole 2,000 years, and they look at what works for them and what doesn't work, and they stick with the plan that works. And they also, when they make moves like this, they're not looking for immediate church growth today, but they're looking down the road when they see Anglican families and commitments moving in their direction, and they say, we can do this because we know in the long run we'll benefit, and that will bring everybody, at least that is their goal, under the sway and influence, if not the direct control, of the Bishop of Rome.
Do you believe that worldwide Anglicanism, presently the titular head is Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, do you believe that worldwide Anglicanism can long tolerate the kind of rebellion that it's been seeing from its American province, the Episcopal Church USA?
I think they're in severe trouble. And, you know, the Anglicans have always tried to find a middle way, but how do you find a middle way between pro-gay and not pro-gay? There's no middle ground there. It doesn't mean that the people that are against gay ordinations are trying to bash those people in any way, but this is a very concrete thing, and it's very offensive to many people, and it's just now it's a point where they have to fish or cut bait, and the Anglicans will probably try to hang out as long as they can before making a decision. But I think that the leadership of the Anglican Church has already decided, as certainly the Episcopalians have had, that they're going to accept the gay marriages and the gay clergy, and that's not going to go away.
Well, on a very much smaller scale, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, as you well know, has recently been playing some of the same games that the Episcopal Church USA has been playing. With only about 30 seconds here, Marty, would it surprise you if Rome said, hey, we can open up a system for disaffected Lutherans, too?
That may be the next thing. All I know is that Martin Luther, during the dialogues, they tried to make Martin Luther acceptable, and the previous pope said, no, we're not going to lift the ban against him. So he really got stuck in their craw, so it may take a long time before Lutherans have a similar opportunity.
Hey, with only a few seconds, how is your family settling in there in Evansville, Indiana?
We're doing just fine, thank you.
Well, we're very, very glad to hear that. Dr. Martin Nolan is pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church in Evansville, Indiana, past director of the Concordia Historical Institute. Thank you very much for being our guest, Marty.
Thank you, Todd.
Hour two of issues. No, it's not hour two of issues, et cetera, yet. That just was so intriguing. I think I lost track of time. The second half hour of issues, et cetera, is straight ahead. Deaconess Pam Nielsen will join us. She does every Tuesday afternoon for teaching a Sunday school lesson. We're kind of walking through the life of these big prophets. It was Elijah for a couple weeks. Today, Elijah's gone. He has been translated into heaven. He's left behind with a double portion of his prophetic spirit, Elisha, his servant. And Elisha picks up right where Elijah left off. The story we'll deal with Deaconess Pam Nielsen on the other side of the break. A famous leper who is healed by Elisha. After our conversation with Deaconess Pam Nielsen, hour two of issues, etc., we'll begin with a short conversation. Bob Emmerich spearheaded an effort to bring the issue of repealing same-sex marriage laws in Maine to the ballot. We'll talk with him. He's from Stand for Marriage, Maine. And then we'll continue our Reformation Week series, 16th Century Reformation and its Theology, Faith Alone, in the last three segments with Pastor Stephen Park.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit theclcc.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial will match 50 cents on each dollar you donate to Lutheran Public Radio, up to $300. So if you donate $300 to Lutheran Public Radio, Thrivent will send us an additional check for $150. For more information, look for the Thrivent Giving Plus gift form under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Make your gift to us go further with Thrivent Giving Plus. We're churchmen, not company men. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Amnesty International is living up to their reputation of supporting radical abortion on demand. Lately, they've been attacking the country of Nicaragua, which has laws protecting its unborn babies and mothers from abortion. Kate Gilmore of Amnesty International calls protecting unborn babies in this country a great horror. She said when it comes to giving amnesty to babies in the womb, it's a human rights scandal and ridicules medical science. Her organization believes unrestricted abortion is an essential medical service. Ms. Gilmore actually said ending abortion was a form of torture against women. When asked if dismembering live babies in the womb was also torture, she refused to answer. Here's some advice. If you're asked to support Amnesty International, just say no.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.